And now a story about finding happiness even under the grimmest of circumstances. Heather Harpham's 2017 memoir begins with the birth of her daughter Gracie, who was perfect. Heather was so happy. Though devastated that Gracie's father Brian, a much older writer, made it clear he didn't want to have children and he wasn't there. But pretty soon, Heather couldn't worry about that because her newborn was not perfect. Something was very wrong with her blood. And in a dizzying cascade of events, Gracie was whisked away. Ultimately, Heather was told Gracie would require blood transfusions just to stay alive. Brian came back into the family fold. He and Heather were told Gracie could have a life-saving bone marrow transplant and it would be best from a sibling, but they decided against having another child. Then fate intervened and Heather became pregnant, and by chance, that child's stem cells did save Gracie through Duke University's Pediatric Blood and Marrow Transplant Clinic. This is a story of happy accidents and some gut-wrenching decisions. The book is titled Happiness, The Crooked Little Road to Semi-Ever After. It was recently released in paperback. We spoke with Heather Harpham when the book was first published, and I began by asking her to tell us, what exactly did Gracie have?
Gracie had a blood disease which manifested as an inability to sustain red cells in circulation. It was never diagnosed. It was a fluke, a mutation. But the situation we were in ultimately became clear, which is that she was a child literally dependent on the kindness of strangers, meaning she had to have blood transfusions in order to survive.
And what would happen is that she would just become, as you wrote, she would become like a rag doll.
Yes. In the very beginning, I never had a newborn before. I didn't know what to expect. And so I just thought she was a kind of dozy, super easy, sleepy baby. But my mom was alert to just how inactive and inert she was and made sure we got back to the doctor.
Now, Brian is not there yet. You are in California having the baby. We'll skip ahead. You cocoon with your mom, terrific friends and family. He eventually does come into the fold, but you've got this thing to work through. You're still both now together dealing with a sick child, but you've got this lingering resentment that he wasn't there at the beginning.
Yes.
How do you resolve that?
First of all, you have to want to. And we don't always want to. I really wanted to. And Brian really wanted to. We both wanted to bridge the abyss. And there had been a connective tissue that remained between us, a connective thread, even when we were quite estranged.
Yeah. Well, then there was also Gracie. You both cared so much about her. As you write, a baby from central casting, really quite something, but with a time bomb inside. You and Brian, you write another point, had made someone with an expiration date. Because as she's getting older, you're finding out she could stay with the blood transfusions and live to 30 or have a bone marrow transplant. And the best matches are from siblings, although that's not a guarantee. But you were told you could do as some couples have and have another child to harvest their umbilical cord stem cells at birth to replace Gracie's.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about the decisions and the thinking you had to do there.
If you have one sick baby, the absolute last thing you want in this world is a second sick baby. And because we had no diagnosis for Gracie, we couldn't be given clear odds. And so we made a choice not to do that. And then luckily, Gabriel, our son, had other ideas and
that was incredible.
Made his way into this world.
You became pregnant again, kind of like by accident. So you didn't have to make the decision couples have made, let us have a child to save the life of another child, to collect stem cells. You didn't have to make that decision because along came the child.
It was made for us.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Along came a child.
But you then had to decide, do we go forward with this transplant?
The mortality risk for pediatric bone marrow transplant is quite high. The lowest that we were getting was a 10% mortality risk. And you're taking that up front. You're taking it right now. It's not a question of what will happen to your kid 15 years in the future. It's a question of will they survive this treatment right now.
Brian comes up with an incredible image. Because of the statistics, he says, imagine 10 little toddlers crossing the street. Only 9 get to the other side. I mean, that's what he presented to you. Do you mind reading from that point in the memoir, describing this debate you were having?
I'd be happy to. If transplant was a huge risk, so was doing nothing. When I thought of Gracie's future without the transplant, the screen filled with silent, gray snow. I could see her at 4, maybe 5 years old, but that was it. Beyond that, she wavered out of sight. My gut feeling was that she needed this cure to survive. If we left her sick, I felt sure she'd get sicker. Failure to thrive. She could dwindle down, sputter out. He was afraid she would die if we transplanted her. I was afraid she would die if we didn't.
You decide to do it.
Yes, we do.
And then you move to the planet of people who are having stem cell transplants for their children. You enter this netherworld, literally go into a place where other families are doing this. Describe that.
It was stunning how ravaged, honestly, many of the children looked. Mm. It almost felt like being among beings who were experiencing things you don't see humans experience. I mean, things powerful enough and painful enough to transmogrify the body. And that was very sobering. Mm. It's one thing to decide in the abstract to take your beautiful little, you know, skipping 3-year-old daughter to cure her. And it's another to see kids who are in the middle of a brutal, brutal process.
Knowing that one child isn't going to make it across the street.
Those may well have been Gracie's odds, you know, 1 in 10 mortality risk. Our actual lived experience on the transplant ward was of a much higher risk level. Mm. There were 16 rooms on the ward where Gracie was treated, where she spent almost 2 months. By the time we left Durham and we'd been there 10 months, I could name a child from every one of those rooms who hadn't made it. Mm. And that was really hard to carry home.
Mm. And hard when you were there. I mean, Brian didn't want to get as close to the families that were there because he knew, you know, some of these parents are going to be shattered. You did and were shattered when some lost them. And meanwhile, your little girl, who is just a trip, starts getting deeper into the process and becoming one of those transmogrified, you know, losing her hair, losing any energy. She's having her bones emptied of their marrow.
That's right. You're being hollowed out like a straw person. At the same time, and she did go, I don't want to be blithe about what was really, really terrible, but there was this extraordinary spirit to observe in her, and I saw it in other kids too, this gorgeous lack of self-narration, if you will. Like, she could be so sick to her stomach, and then she'd wipe her mouth, and she'd pick up her ponies, and she'd go back to playing. Mm. And I was thinking, you know, if I'd been sick on that level, I'd be talking about it for a week. It would be the story of what was going on. I just can't believe it. I felt so sick. I was so sick. She just, like, that was then. I was just sick a minute ago. But now I'm going to motor my bed head up and the foot up, and I'm going to play around in this little valley that I've made out of my bed. You know, you look for whatever silver linings you can. That, for me, was one of those lessons. Like, hey, pay attention. You don't have to attach yourself to the story of how terrible this is. You can actually just try to live it moment by moment by moment.
And you do. There is a happy ending. There's actually a scene, both Gabe, you know, the little brother who gave his stem cells, and Gracie, who received them, are back in the hotel, and they've fallen asleep together. As you write, her fingers curled around his thumb. They didn't stir. They were busy doing the covert work children do at night, the multiplication of cells, the silent, unstoppable growth, the hatching of private plans. What I can't imagine didn't seem to you in that moment like a miracle. She's growing.
Yeah, it did. It still does. She's a beautiful young woman. It's both an absolutely ordinary reality and an astonishing, beautiful fact.
The book's title, Heather, Happiness. You take time throughout to try to decide what that is. What is that now?
You know it when you feel it. It's, of course, by nature, totally ephemeral, and it doesn't always come as the result of some perfect set of circumstances. It just doesn't. You can check off all the boxes and be miserable, or you can be, at least for a moment, on a pediatric intensive care unit and have a little exchange with your baby that brings you joy. So, gosh, I don't know.
It's a crooked little road, as you write. Heather Harpam's memoir is Happiness, The Crooked Little Road to Semi-Ever After. Heather, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, Robin. It's been a pleasure.